From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 7th day of February 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's a senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign. In agricultural news, members of the Senate Ag Committee are already jockeying for position in the soon-to-come budget deficit reduction discussions. AFBF is warning federal subsidies for crop insurance premiums could become a target for the budget acts. And USDA thinks it'll probably be okay for farmers in this nation to grow Roundup-ready sugar beets. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour. And then, if you listened to our conversations last week, you heard me refer more than once to some thoughts on the cattle industry penned by Purdue University ag economist Chris Hurt. We'll bring them to you, edited just a bit, but mostly intact, in his own words, later in the program. And hey, don't forget, in 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Checking the numbers in Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished with the soft red winter wheat up a nickel at $8.58¾ for the March, at $8.90½, up 5¾ in the May. And July, the harvest month, at $9.16¾, 8½ higher. Hard red March at $9.53½ from Kansas City, a gain today of 10¾¢. Back in Chicago, the March corn futures finished 3¾¢ lower at $6.74¾ a bushel. The May futures, $6.85¾, down 3½¢. July corn at $6.91½, down 2¾¢. In the September, $6.43¾, a quarter of a cent lower. December futures, though, were up a quarter of a cent, settled at $6.02 for the new crop corn. March soybean futures, $14.24½, down 9¢ today. May at $14.35½, 8½ lower. That's 8½ lower. And July at $14.43, down 7. August, $14.17½, down 5. And September futures at $13.89, down 4. November beans at $13.66 a bushel, down 3¢ on the afternoon. March bean meal at $3.82.40, down 80. March soybean oil at $58.41, down 57. Live cattle futures finished the February contract at $107.72½, down 52½. The March futures at $124.57½, down 42½. And February lean hogs today at $84.95 a hundredweight, up 45¢ per 100 pounds. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, March contract, $87.43 a barrel, down $1.60. Ethanol at $2.39¢, that's $0.01½ lower on the day. Natural gas at $4.11½, down $0.19½. That's natural gas. The heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.70¢, down just about 0.8¢. And the gold futures today at $1,347.60 an ounce, down 70 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 12,162, just about 70 points higher. The dollar at 78.03 is down 0.01. And the CRB index at 337.46 is down 1.46 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service on this Monday afternoon. Skies today will contain a few flurries. Sunshine turning cloudy. It'll be high near 30 degrees, and then she's going to drop off dramatically by the time we get to this evening. It'll be mostly cloudy, a low of just 6. Wind chill values between negative 6 and 4 above. Northwest winds tonight between 11 and 14. They'll gust all the way to 20 miles an hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies. The high just in the teens. The high near 12 degrees. Wind chill values between negative 9 and 1 tomorrow. Bundle up. North-northwest winds between 8 and 13. They'll gust as high as 17. And tomorrow night, partly cloudy, a low of 7 degrees. Wind chill values between 4 below and 1 above. West-northwest winds around 8 miles an hour on Tuesday night. Wednesday, it should be partly sunny. The high will get to, well, just 15 degrees. West-northwest winds around 9, and Wednesday night, partly cloudy. The low, around negative 1. We'll have more on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour, and we talk to the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago.
The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. On the phone line with us today to take a look at the agricultural futures markets, as usual, Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, where he serves as their senior futures analyst. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Bundle up. It's going to get cold fast. So I want to know what that means for the marketplace and whether we're still looking at problems with the livestock industry in terms of getting things moving because of snow and then, of course, weight gains because of the cold weather. And does that calculate over time into higher levels for mercantile exchange live futures?
It was definitely supportive last week. That's what brought us off the correction lows there on Wednesday and Thursday, but as you look into next week, we're talking much warmer temperatures up into the 40s possibly. So it's a weather market. The forecast would turn back to the colder side again. We'd definitely be back up because this up and down is going to put a lot of stress on the livestock side. More importantly, too, as we move along in here, as particularly as we get in March, we start talking muddy feedlots and so forth. So it's going to put the livestock sector to the test here. But with a little better forecast for next week and a correction or a pullback in cutout values gave the trade reason to print a well profit or see a correction in the fat side of the equation there.
Yeah, we are at very high levels for hogs and cattle, aren't we?
Oh, boy, it's amazing. All these markets are at extremely high levels. It's all sort of moving in tandem together, so it's kind of watching to see which one says uncle first.
All right, turn your attention to the grains and the oil seeds. Let's start with the wheat futures, which were up a nickel to 10 cents, depending on which month you were looking at for the day.
It was basically a worldwide buying spree. You just go right down the list, Egypt, Iraq, Algeria, Jordan, Iran, just about every country in the world stepped forward here and was a buyer here over the last week, gathering some inventory. Fundamentally, it suggests that we're going to see a couple good sales here on the export side of the equation worldwide. Ideas are that this continues. We tighten the supply-demand balance sheet a little bit more on the wheat side. But two, spread activity. The trade seemed comfortable buying wheat, selling corn on the spread. I don't think they were brave enough just to go out light long in the wheat market just right here at the moment, but they definitely put on the spread there. So we'll see if more sales develop here as we move down the road. The issue is still food security and securing inventory to meet the needs of each individual country.
And on this Monday, what did you make of the corn and the soybean trade? Was it just marking time for the day?
Correction. July corn got to $6.98 and a quarter, just 1 3/4 from the magic $7 level. We sort of kind of failed to see some additional news come at us here. The momentum indicators overbought. We did establish a hook reversal to the downside, made a new high, closed a little lower. But we did that in the cotton market, and cotton's up limit today. So we'll see if it holds a day or two down, and should things any good, I would think we'd hold about a nickel below today's lows. We've had several hook reversals. And they were good for a steady lower trade for a couple of days, and the market came back. We saw the trade want to gather some inventory. A lot of these end users are hand-to-mouth, so they're going to use the breaks here to gather inventory. On the bean side, just more news of bigger South American production. Just about every Brazilian agency raised their forecast on the production number. Early yields are real good. And as we move along here, we'll start to see the buyers, such as Asia, mainly focus on the southern hemisphere as long as there's not any harvest disruptions or dock strikes.
In just a couple of minutes here, Dave Dickey during the newscast will tell us that the cotton growers over the weekend had surveyed in the United States at least their membership, and they're planning to plant more cotton than they have in many years. Are you surprised that didn't spill over into the soybeans to an upside move?
I think the trade's waiting for the numbers here in March for confirmation that it varies greatly from advisor to advisor, trader to trader. I mean, gosh, they're definite on more acres or less acres, and there's no in between. And they've all got good points and good observations. But these surveys are going to start getting more fine-tuned here, and definitely more cotton acres will be supportive to the bean market, yes.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us today.
Very good, Todd. Thanks.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Monday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
The 21st annual All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting is sure to attract a crowd. Among those presenting March 8th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, Murray Wise from Murray Wise Associates, Joe Vaklovic from MF Global, Roy Huckabee from the Lind Group, and Tom Fritz from EFG. Avoid the long registration line by calling 800-528-7980. The cost of the ticket is $20 and includes a continental breakfast and lunch. When you register with your major credit card, we'll mail your tickets good for our VIP line. The number to call is 800-528-7980.
Again, that number, 800-528-7980. Now here's Dave with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Senate Agriculture Ranking Member Pat Roberts says that food stamps should be on the table along with farm subsidies and federal budget deficit reduction. Roberts says, quote, "We have to look at the entire budget in terms of whatever percentage Congress agrees should be cut." Meanwhile, AFBF lobbyist Mary Kay Thatcher says that federal subsidies for crop insurance premiums could be a target for cuts as Congress tries to reduce the budget deficit and wrestles with a new farm bill in 2012. 69% of federal spending on crop insurance goes for producer premium subsidies. Thatcher says that these subsidies would be vulnerable as Congress looks for money and tries to continue programs that do not have any budget baseline to continue beyond October 1st of 2012. USDA says farmers will be able to grow Roundup Ready sugar beets with some restrictions under a decision to partially deregulate the crop. The decision by USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service is an interim order through the end of 2012. Barring another court ruling, USDA's decision could bring some ease to about 10,000 or so farmers affected in the 10 states that produce the majority of sugar beets in the U.S. U.S. Commerce Secretary Gary Locke expressed concern today over India's restrictive trade policy, saying it impeded investment despite growing economic and security ties between the two nations. India is still only the 14th biggest trading partner for the United States. Locke says, quote, "Even though India has made tremendous strides to open up its economy, there is much more work that is left to be done." The National Cotton Council says that U.S. producers responding to price signals plan to plant 12.5 million acres of cotton this spring, up 14% from last year's 10.97 million acres. Survey results were unveiled Saturday at the council's convention in San Antonio. The intended acreage is the largest since 2006, when growers planted 15.274 million acres. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Both programs you can hear anytime you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. You can also pre-register there or find the phone number to pre-register for our all-day Ag Outlook meeting coming up on the 8th day of March. We've already sold more than 170 tickets, just 120 left. Better get in now if you'd like to attend that meeting over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Speaking of beef, beef cattle producers, well, they're kind of one out of the marketplace at this point. And Chris Hurt, Purdue Extension Ag Economist, has some reasons why and has been wondering just how high prices of beef will go.
A smaller beef herd was reported by the USDA in their January 1 cattle inventory estimates, and that has provided the cattle markets with even more bullish news. Beef cow numbers continue to fall as producers seem to want out of the business. The continued decline is related to multi-year financial discouragement due to high and volatile feed prices, to shortages of pastures in some areas last summer, and developing dry conditions in the southeast and the central and southern plains. Beef cow numbers at 30.9 million head are down 2% over the past year and down 6% since 2005. Regionally, the largest decline in beef cows was in the Western Corn Belt, where numbers declined by 168,000 head in the past year. This decline was led by the state of Missouri with 103,000 fewer head and Iowa with a 45,000 head reduction. The Southern Plains had a reduction of 166,000 head. That, of course, was led by Texas with 115,000 fewer head of beef cows. The southeastern region had the third largest decline, with a reduction of 121,000 head. In the eastern corn belt, beef cow numbers declined by 35,000, led by a reduction of 37,000 cows in Illinois. Illinois has had a 24% decline in beef cow numbers since 2005. The only area of increase was in the northern and central plains, as cow numbers continue to concentrate somewhat more towards the center of the country. Producers are also planning to further reduce their numbers. We know that by the number of beef heifers that are being retained for breeding purposes, which were reported as down 5%. This means that beef cow numbers should continue to drop at least into the USDA July inventory report. The expected 2011 calf crop should be about 35.3 million head. That'll be down 1% as well. As we look at calf prices, Oklahoma 6 to 650 pound calves last week sold at about $1.32 a pound, while 5 to 550 pound calves were $1.46 a pound. The strength in calf prices over the past 6 months means that what we've actually seen, that finished cattle prices have increased enough to cover the higher corn and soybean meal cost. Unlike the rising feed prices we had back in 2008, the surge in feed prices over the past 6 months has been met by increases in both the live cattle prices and certainly lean hog futures as well. Weather in 2011 and 2012 will probably be the deciding factor determining when the beef cattle industry will shift from its current liquidation into expansion. If we had really favorable weather that would provide above-trend corn, soybean, and wheat crops in the United States, along with abundant forages, that certainly could shift the industry back into expansion by early 2012. That would give us much lower feed prices and would provide strong financial incentives to expand the brood cow numbers. If we just end up with trend yields, that should provide modestly lower feed cost for late 2011 and 12, and probably calf prices would rise proportionally next fall, and that'll provide some financial incentive to expand the brood cow numbers. Of course, we have the bad situation, and that is if we end up with below-trend yields and shortages of forages. That's certainly going to keep the industry in a state of contraction with even higher finished cattle prices and feeder calf and calf prices in 2012. As we all know, much is riding on the 2011 weather for both the crop and livestock producers, as well as everyone who enjoys multiple meals a day at moderate cost. For the University of Illinois and Purdue University, this is Chris Hurt.
You can read more of Chris Hurt's thoughts from the FarmDoc website. In fact, you can listen to that entire podcast. There's about another, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes of it. You can hear right there at FarmDoc. It's farmdoc.illinois.edu.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's a Monday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. On the phone line with us this afternoon from the Andersons right here in Champaign County, Greg Johnson will help us take a look at the cash grain market. Hi, Greg. How are you today?
Good, Todd. How are you doing?
Oh, on a sunny and beautiful afternoon. And boy, it's going to get cold tonight, but this afternoon it's really, really nice. I'm wondering if anybody has decided to take the opportunity to move grain into you.
Not really. Moving grain, maybe, but selling grain, no. We are seeing a little bit of truck traffic pick up. But last week, with the weather the way it was, it just came to a complete standstill.
So nobody's been tempted by these higher prices yet to make some new sales?
Oh, I mean, people are tempted, but it sure feels like it's got more room to go up. So I think we're trying to caution people into slowing down their sales. $5 sounds good, but $4 sounded good last year, and now it doesn't look very good. So $5 may be in the same boat as $4 corn last year. So nothing wrong with selling maybe a little bit, a very little bit, but I wouldn't want to get too excited. There's a lot of ifs to be answered yet. How many acres are we going to plant? What kind of start are we going to get off to? Are these Chinese rumors true or not? How much more fund money is going to come into the market? So until we get some of those questions answered, I don't think there's much downside in corn.
Oh, wait a second, back up. I was busy doing other things today. What were the Chinese rumors for today?
Well, Friday's rumors when corn was up 16 cents. We haven't confirmed that yet, but they've bought meats, they've bought soybeans, they bought wheat out of Australia. Seems kind of logical that they might be in the market for corn here sometime soon.
And what are your bids on the day?
Cash corn tonight is $6.67. New crop corn, $5.67, cash beans, $14.07, new crop, $13.31, and new crop wheat, $8.57.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Greg Johnson is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County and joins us on the Closing Market Report each and every Monday afternoon. When we come back in just a couple minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. The folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, will be with us. We're going to drop off dramatically from this afternoon's high of about 30 degrees to, well, just about 6 degrees tonight. By the time we get to Wednesday evening of this week, it'll be down to 1. We'll check with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to see what kind of winds come along with that and how widespread that cold will be. One other thing we need to check in on, you should check in on this number, 800-528-7980, 800-528-7980. If you have yet to reserve your space, your seat for the All-Day Ag Outlook on the 8th day of March, probably ought to start dialing now. Back in 2 minutes.
It's National Fettuccine Alfredo Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1804, John Deere was born. An American inventor and manufacturer, he developed the first steel plow in 1838 and eventually founded John Deere and Company in 1868. As a blacksmith, he frequently repaired the wood and cast iron plows broken by the heavy clay soils of the eastern U.S. Deere's steel plows solved the problem. Originally, he used imported English steel for his plows, but he converted to U.S. steel when Pittsburgh steel plants could provide a suitable product. Deere also manufactured harrows, drills, cultivators, and wagons. In 1875, Sir Chester Beatty was born, an American-born naturalized British mining engineer. He perfected a method for extracting copper from low-grade ore. In 1899, Hans Jenn was born, a Swiss agricultural chemist. He developed numerical functions to describe soil in his book, Factors of Soil Formation. The five factors, climate, that's temperature and moisture, organisms, relief, described as topography, parent material, that's the type of bedrock or sediment, and time. In 1938, Harvey Firestone died. His innovations included non-skid tire treads and farm tractor tires. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
This is the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason from U of I Extension. On the phone line with us is Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago to take a look at the weather forecast. Let's start right here in the Midwest. It looks like it's going to get cold tonight and stay that way for a few days. Tell me about it.
Yeah, we have another Arctic surge, Todd, here into the middle of the country, and that will produce another round of sub-zero temperatures across much of the Midwest, and especially across the northern and northwestern sections of the belt, which will be the coldest here coming up over the next several nights. Once we get beyond this cold shot over the next few days, it does look like the pattern, this cold wintry pattern here will break, and we do see warmer temperatures moving back into the Midwest and actually staying warm as we go throughout much of next week. So certainly winter will have its grip here for another few days across the Midwest, let alone much of the central and eastern portion of the country. But once we get past the next 4 or 5 days, it looks like things finally break here, and at least something a bit more spring-like following our wintry weather here, extreme wintry weather that we've seen here of late.
Oh, don't worry. We're still in February. We've probably got some winter yet to come. But I see a 40-degree mark out there pretty in the not-so-distant future, at least for us, I think, on maybe Sunday of this coming week. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. I'll be up in the 40s, especially across the southern Midwest. Northern Midwest, a bit debatable, especially with the incredible amounts of snow still in place. So it'll take some time here, at least for our daytime temperatures, maximum temperatures to warm up, but at least overnight with the high moisture content, that will keep overnight minimum temperatures quite high and likely above freezing as well. So that will begin what looks to be a rapid snow melt here in response to the warmer pattern.
Does that mean we'll have flooding of sorts coming too?
Well, that is something to watch here coming up, at least in the short term. No sign of any kind of major flooding issues at this time. And a lot of that, at least in the short term, is due to the lack of any big storm systems, via rain over the next several weeks. One thing that needs to be watched here, just way down the line here, and this is something more so across the northern sections of the Midwest, particularly the Red River Valley of the eastern Dakotas, western Minnesota. That area looks to be once again influenced by flooding to some extent here this spring, and that's because they have a lot of snow cover at this time. And when you usually get this much snow at this time of year, that usually, and we've seen that over the past few years, that likely spells some flooding issues here come spring.
Mark, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us on the Closing Market Report each and every Monday afternoon. Thanks for being with us. Bundle up. It's going to be cold out there this evening. Stay warm and take care of the livestock.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.